Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We are currently trapped at 136 and Brook Avenue since 7:45. They are pushing us! They are pushing us! They are pushing us! They are pushing us!
New York City has agreed to an historic multi-million dollar settlement with peaceful protesters in the South Bronx who police violently boxed in or kettled during a 2020 protest 2 weeks after the police murder of George Floyd. We'll speak with two of the plaintiffs and with a journalist who is filming that day. Then to Nigeria, where opposition parties are disputing the results of Saturday's presidential election in Africa's most populous country.
We won the election, and we'll prove it to Nigerians.
We'll go to Lagos for an update. Then Guatemala bans Thelma Cabrera, the Mayamam environmental and human rights activist, from running for president. We'll speak with Cabrera and her running mate in a rare U.S. interview.
La respuesta de nosotros los pueblos viene a ratificar.
The response as indigenous people is that this ratifies what we've always denounced, that Guatemala is a corrupt state that's been co-opted by criminals.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz has begun a two-day visit to Washington, D.C. for confidential talks with President Biden that are believed to be focused on Russia's invasion of Ukraine. German opposition leaders have accused Scholz of secrecy after he scheduled no public appearances, no press conferences, and traveled without his usual contingent of journalists. The talks follow tensions over U.S. demands Germany ship Leopard 2 battle tanks to Ukraine, which Germany agreed to in January. The U.S. is also pressuring Germany to speed up production of ammunition. Meanwhile, the head of Russia's Wagner Group said today mercenaries have almost completely surrounded the besieged city of Bakhmut in Ukraine's eastern Donbas region. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says he pressed Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov to reestablish the New START nuclear arms reduction treaty after their brief encounter Thursday on the sidelines of the G20 summit in New Delhi. It was the first face-to-face meeting of high-level U.S. and Russian officials since Russia's invasion over a year ago.
I urge Russia to reverse its irresponsible decision and return to implementing the New START treaty, which places verifiable limits on the nuclear arsenals of the United States and the Russian Federation. Mutual compliance is in the interest of both our countries. It's also what people around the world expect from us as nuclear powers.
Neither the U.S. nor Russia has joined 92 other nations that have signed the U.N. Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons. In Belarus, a court has sentenced pro-democracy activist Aleš Beliatsky, a 2022 Nobel Peace Laureate and 2020 Right Livelihood Laureate, to 10 years in prison. Beliatsky and three other people from the Vyazna Human Rights Center were convicted with financing anti-government protests and smuggling money, the government said. He's been in jail since 2020 when wide-scale protests erupted against the re-election of President Alexander Lukashenko. In Cambodia, opposition leader Khem Sokha has been sentenced to 27 years of house arrest. The former leader of the now-banned Cambodian National Rescue Party was accused of conspiracy with a foreign power, treason, and encouraging a revolution. This comes amidst a heightened crackdown in Cambodia on opposition and the media. Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank shot and killed a 15-year-old Palestinian boy Thursday during a raid near the city of Qalqilya. The Palestinian Ministry of Health reports the teenager, Mohammed Nidal Salim, was shot in the back while two other Palestinians were wounded, including one person who was struck in the chest by gunfire. Israel's army said soldiers were responding to suspects who hurled Molotov cocktails at them. Israeli soldiers and police have killed at least 65 Palestinians so far this year, a rate of more than one death per day. 13 Israelis and one police officer have been killed by Palestinians over the same period. French President Emmanuel Macron declared Thursday the era of French interference in Africa is over as he embarked on a four-nation tour of the continent. Last week, Macron pledged to reduce France's military role in Africa after recent withdrawals from Mali and Burkina Faso. France's efforts to stem attacks from Islamist insurgents in the Sahel have largely failed. But Macron said France intends to maintain a presence in its former colonies with a reduced footprint amidst Western concerns of growing ties with Russia and China. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, a former Belgian colony, protesters gathered outside the French embassy in Kinshasa this week. They condemned Macron's visit and demanded France pressure Rwandan President Paul Kagame to stop supporting M23 rebels in the DRC.
France finances terrorist groups here in Africa, in several African states, in the Congo. So recently, Mr. Macron came to placate us, the Congolese, but the Congolese people are not duped. Never did he point a finger at Mr. Kagame. At no point did he condemn Mr. Kagame.
Here in the United States, Walgreens says it will not dispense abortion pills in some states where the procedure remains legal after receiving pressure and threats from Republican lawmakers and anti-abortion groups. The Biden administration approved the sale of the abortion pill, mifepristone, directly from pharmacies in January, both by mail and in person. Medical abortions are now the most popular method of terminating a pregnancy, can be a lifeline for many people following the overturning of Roe v. Wade. This comes as a Texas judge is poised to deliver a ruling that could halt distribution of the abortion pills nationwide. On Thursday, a group of top human rights groups and experts asked the UN to intervene to stop the destruction of abortion rights in the U.S., saying that with the SCOTUS decision in Dobbs, quote, the U.S. is in violation of its obligations under international human rights law, unquote. Meanwhile, reproductive rights groups in Ohio submitted a petition to create a ballot initiative that would let Ohioans vote to enshrine abortion rights in the Ohio Constitution. Eli Lilly has announced it's lowering the price of insulin by 70%, capping its out-of-pocket cost at $35 and offering its generic insulin at $25. The move follows years of organizing and pressure from activists, lawmakers, and people with diabetes. In response, Senator Bernie Sanders wrote to the drug companies Sanofi and Novo Nordisk, demanding they follow suit. Sanders wrote, quote, "Insulin is not a new drug. It was discovered 100 years ago by Canadian scientists who sold the patent rights of insulin for just $1 because they wanted to save lives, not make pharmaceutical executives extremely wealthy. And yet, as a result of unacceptable corporate greed, the price of insulin has gone up by over 1,000% since 1996, causing 1.3 million people with diabetes to ration insulin last year, while your companies made billions of dollars in profits," Senator Sanders wrote. The Environmental Protection Agency has ordered Norfolk Southern to test for dioxins in East Palestine, Ohio, the site of a February 3rd train wreck that caused a massive release of chemicals. Dioxins are a class of highly toxic contaminants that could have formed in the chemical burn-off of the wreckage. They're found in Agent Orange and have been linked to some of the worst environmental disasters in U.S. history, including the poisoning of the Love Canal neighborhood of Niagara Falls, New York, in the 1970s. The EPA's order came as residents confronted a representative for Norfolk Southern at a town hall meeting in East Palestine Thursday evening.
On every level. This has touched my family. This has touched my friends. This has touched my farm. This has touched my animals. This has touched my finances. This has touched my home. And it will touch me to the cellular level when I get diagnosed with cancer, ALS, or whatever is going to come down the road if I stay in this contaminated, toxic town, and you all know it.
On Wednesday, union leaders representing rail workers wrote to Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, Ohio Governor Mike DeWine, and other officials blasting Norfolk Southern for risking the health of workers at the crash site and not providing personal protective equipment as they clean up. The letter states workers, quote, continue to experience migraines and nausea days after the derailment, and they all suspect that they were willingly exposed to these chemicals at the direction of Norfolk Southern, they wrote. On Capitol Hill, the House Ethics Committee has opened an investigation into Republican Congressmember George Santos, who's admitted to lying about his background during a successful 2022 campaign to represent New York's 3rd congressional district. The committee will probe whether Congressmember Santos engaged in unlawful activity, including failure to properly disclose financial information, whether he violated conflict of interest laws, and allegations of sexual misconduct. Republican House Speaker Kevin McCarthy has so far refused to call on Santos to step down. And the Justice Department has argued former President Donald Trump does not have absolute immunity from civil lawsuits stemming from the January 6 assault on the U.S. Capitol. Top Justice Department lawyers made the assertion as part of an amicus brief filed on behalf of Capitol police officers and House Democrats who are suing Trump for physical and psychological harm brought by the insurrection. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. When we come back, New York City has agreed to an historic multi-million dollar settlement with peaceful South Bronx protesters who police violently boxed in or kettled during a 2020 protest 2 weeks after the police murder of George Floyd. We'll speak with two of the plaintiffs and a journalist who was filming that day. Stay with us.
With the quickness. One sweat, two sweat, three motions. What motions? What could it be? She watching you. Who, me? Honey Velveeta got you cut. Ain't no locking up now. Just the symmetric to your bottom. Ain't no locking up. Shake, listen, that Catholic cool. Push panic, the button, and freeze. A's for amen, J's for the Jennifer O'Denny's. Oh, please, oh, please.
Let Me In by De La Soul. After decades of legal wrangling over sample clearance, the seminal hip-hop group's music will finally be available online today. Bittersweet after the passing last month of member Trugoy the Dove. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show here in New York, where the city has agreed to a multi-million dollar settlement with peaceful protesters who were violently boxed in or kettled by New York police officers during a Black Lives Matter demonstration 2 weeks after the police murder of George Floyd in 2020. As part of the settlement, over 300 people who were trapped by police and assaulted with batons and pepper spray, then detained or arrested at a June 4, 2020 protest, will each receive $21,500, believed to be the largest class action settlement in a case of mass arrest. The arrest took place in the South Bronx. A Human Rights Watch investigation said the NYPD's conduct that day amounted to serious violations of international human rights law.
We are currently trapped at 136 and Brook Avenue since 7:45. They are pushing us. They are pushing us.
Part part of a video report produced by Human Rights Watch that raised awareness about the kettling that took place that day. This is another clip.
As the marchers headed down Willis Avenue, more than 50 police officers blocked the street.
Yo, we're gonna go around.
The march redirected down 136th Street. And in the final minutes, just before the 8 o'clock curfew, instead of allowing or even directing the marchers to disperse, the NYPD diverted its bicycle officers to block the marchers just as they reached the intersection of 136th and Brook Avenue. Line of officers blocked the protesters from turning back. It's a tactic called kettling.
That's from a Human Rights Watch investigation of the NYPD kettling in the South Bronx June 4th, 2020, that was the focus of the historic settlement announced this week. In response to concerns raised at the time, the police said their crackdown was pre-planned. This is New York City Police Commissioner at the time, Dermot Shea.
And we had a plan which was executed nearly flawlessly in the Bronx. This wasn't, again, about protest. This was about tearing down society.
Meanwhile, NYPD's Strategic Response Group has continued to target nonviolent protesters. And this week, dozens of people testified at the New York City Council about their abusive tactics. The NYPD refused to show up. For more, we're joined by three people who were at the protest in the Bronx in June 2020. Sanji Lopez was filming the protest. She's currently a video news fellow here at Democracy Now! Her footage was used in the Human Rights Watch report. Also with us, Samira Sierra and Amelie Sierra. They're sisters. They're among the five listed plaintiffs. And joining us, Joshua Moskowitz, one of the lawyers representing the plaintiffs. We welcome you all to Democracy Now! Let's begin with the plaintiffs, with Samira and Amelie. Samira, why don't you start off by talking about what this protest was about 2 weeks after George Floyd's murder, where you marched and what happened?
Good morning. The protest was during the uprisings right after George Floyd's murder. And simply, we were exercising our human rights, our civil rights, and we were demonstrating and standing up against all of the racial injustice that happens day in and day out in this country.
And Amelie, that's your older sister, Samira. Talk about your decision. I mean, it was brave to go out. We're talking about June of 2020. This is at the height of the COVID pandemic, at the time of the killing, the police killing of George Floyd. Did you expect what happened to happen? And then explain what happened in just one block of the South Bronx when you were stopped by police.
Yes. So, to your point, this was in the midst of a global health crisis. We had been in the pandemic for a few months at this point. This was not the first of the protests that we attended that summer. It was the first that we had attended in our home in the South Bronx. And the energy that day from the beginning of the protests was very tense. And so the very short protest that we partook in on June 4th reflected just that. It was very tense. It was met very violently. However, we were very peaceful in our demeanor, while also making sure to exercise our right that we are entitled to and express the anger and the frustration that we felt because of the violence that Black and brown people are constantly met with in the United States of America. And so although our message was very clear and we were very intentional in expressing our frustration or our anger, we were not violent. We were very peaceful. And so it was met very violently, and we were not expecting at any point to be met with all the aggression that we were by the NYPD and by the SRG specifically.
I mean, the terrifying image, Samira, of the police blocking you in, kettling you, and telling you to move where there's no place to go, and then explain what the police did.
Sure. So we were very strategically guided down 136th Street. And as we were walking down towards Brook Avenue, we were blocked off by a line of officers on both ends of the street, so off of Willis Avenue and on Brook Avenue. And there was a commander in a white shirt who continued to direct the officers to move in at the same time. We were boxed in, we were kettled, and we were also squished. Our bodies were squished up against each other. There were people that, I mean, you just passed that footage where, you know, it was terror. We were terrified for our lives. People couldn't breathe. People were fainting. I have never in my life felt the amount of fear that I felt that day.
Sanji Lopez, it's great to have you on screen, as you're usually behind the scenes and filming, and that's what you were doing that day, Democracy Now! Video News Fellow now. But at the time, you were filming this protest. Explain what you saw. And, I mean, when you see the police, the first arrests are of the legal and the medics, and they're very clear about what they're doing. Move ahead and arrest them, they said.
Right, Amy, I was there. I'm actually a South Bronx resident. I live in Mont Haven, and this was the second peaceful protest that I participated in my neighborhood. And it was absolutely peaceful. What I saw when the police came down this hill on 137th Street and kettled folks, I saw police coming down the hill on bikes at rapid speed. And as soon as that happened, literally like a second later, they started blocking people off with their bikes and pushing people with these bikes, attacking medics, like you said, Amy, attacking lawyers, people that were there, legal aides, to help community members and protesters alike in case things like this happen, right? But we were not expecting that. Luckily, I managed to run away. But before I could run away, I was able to document and film, as you said, HRW and SAITU, Human Rights Watch, were able to use the video that I recorded that day. But it was frightening. I had never been so scared and fearful in my own neighborhood. And I'll never forget that. I wasn't able to leave my home for months after that, like other protesters, and felt unsafe. And it was just so traumatizing that day.
I want to bring the lawyer into this conversation, Joshua Moskowitz, the lawyer for the plaintiffs. Joshua, talk about the unit of police. I mean, we just played Dermot Shea, the police chief at the time in New York, saying this was all pre-planned by the police. And in this Human Rights Watch reporting, which uses a lot of Sanji's footage, you see they deliberately go after the legal and the medical teams first. And they're very clear. One of the police officers said, it said something, I think he had police legal on his shirt. And he said, it's fine to arrest the legal observers, who are considered essential workers at the time, right? They were allowed to be out. Explain who this team of police are.
Right. So the NYPD's Strategic Response Group, or SRG, are a paramilitary organization within the NYPD that are used to police protest events, nonviolent protest events like we saw in Mott Haven. They've come under appropriate scrutiny for their violent tactics that are primarily used to suppress nonviolent free speech activity like we saw in Mott Haven. This was no accident. This was a planned operation. And what's unique about the Mott Haven operation is that It was planned by the highest level officials within the police department. Terrence Monahan, the chief of department, which is the highest ranked, highest uniformed ranking officer within the police department, was personally present at Mott Haven. So were the executive officer, the commanding officer, and the bureau chief that oversee the SRG unit. They had a plan that day, and as the commissioner said the next day, it was executed, in their view, flawlessly.
I mean, it's just astounding. And you see them separate out. One of the leaders of the protest with a bullhorn, they push her aside. In fact, she was one of the first to be arrested.
That's right. I mean, there's no question in the world that the plan that day was to instill fear in people so that they would stop protesting. This was not a violent uprising. This was a peaceful protest. In fact, there were people attending the protest who lived in the South Bronx who were members of the mayor's cabinet. The commissioner of the community affairs for Mayor de Blasio was there personally because he lived in the South Bronx, Marco Carrion. He talked about what happened that day and described the sentiment at the protest as closer to a candlelight vigil. The purpose of this operation was to instill fear in people.
You know, it's very interesting that on Wednesday, the city council held a long-planned, repeatedly delayed oversight hearing on the strategic response group that was involved with this. No one from the NYPD showed up, citing ongoing litigation. Your response to this, and talk about this historic settlement in the country for what took place in the South Bronx.
Well, as you said, this is a historic settlement. As far as we can tell, this is the largest per-person class action mass arrest settlement in the country. And we think that that is appropriate given the extreme violence that we saw carried out by the NYPD during that operation. And the size of the award that the city agreed to, we think, reflects an acknowledgement or understanding that what happened that day was unconstitutional, it was immoral, and it should never happen again. We hope that the NYPD has taken this to heart and will reform the operations and, frankly, never use the SRG for policing protest events in the future. But the other aspect of this case that I think often gets overlooked is that this happened in the South Bronx. This happened in New York Congressional District 15, which is 97% people of color. It's also one of the poorest congressional districts in the entire country. This operation wasn't carried out in Manhattan, where there were protests. It wasn't carried out in Brooklyn, where there were protests that summer. There was a choice made at the highest levels of the NYPD to carry out this operation in the South Bronx. And that fact is part of what has led to the Human Rights Watch finding this to be a human rights violation. And we're proud of our clients in pursuing this litigation and pursuing the result that they achieved here for people who weren't able to get lawyers, but who were there that day and who were injured.
Amelie and Samira. Amelie, you're 25. Samira's 30 now. This was 3 years ago. What does this settlement mean for each of you? Amelie, let's begin with you.
This settlement is larger than myself. I believe that this settlement allows for individuals who were there that day, the hundreds of individuals that were there that day, the opportunity to come forward, the opportunity to be recognized and acknowledged based off of the abuse that they endured that day, and hopefully an opportunity to also heal. It was very traumatic, and trauma looks very different for every individual. And so I hope that this encourages all of the individuals that were unable to represent themselves to come forward. And that is why it is extremely crucial and very important to be a representative of class action of this magnitude, not just for myself, but for the greater good and for all of the people that were unable to represent themselves.
And Samira, your response, and also the fact that no police officer was charged that day, and also there wasn't an official apology, but you did have this financial settlement.
Right. The settlement to me means that the city of New York is being held accountable for organizing the highest level of the NYPD, which is the Strategic Response Group, and holding them accountable for flawlessly executing excessive force in the South Bronx, which is my home.
And Josh, very quickly.
It also means to
go ahead.
It also means to me that they're being held accountable for the violation of human rights of Black and Brown folks in this country. One of many. We have a long way to go, but it feels really good, for the lack of a better word, to know that there is some accountability.
Joshua, very quickly.